Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins, Walt Silva, and Dolly Howard. This is a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Turn away from disaster, horizon side. Choose your heart as a master.
And welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It is June 11th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva and Dolly Howard. And I'm going to unmute them to see if they're here. You guys here?
No, we are muted.
We're in protest because you mute us.
Oh, my
hey,
goodness.
Hey, Dolly, did you know that Nancy is bulletproof?
No.
Oh, yeah. This past Thursday, she bought some newfangled piece of hardware. You know, Nancy, she only uses this latest space age stuff. And at one point, I didn't know what the heck's going on. So I asked her, you got to turn on the camera so I can look at this thing and I can help you better. So she turns on the camera and the first thing I see is her torso. She's wearing a T-shirt and smack in the middle of the chest, she's got a bullet hole. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Did someone take a pot shot at you? And she goes, no, you try to take me out with an armor-piercing ordnance, and it just bounces off. So she's walking around with this bullet, with this hole in the middle of her T-shirt.
Listen, I love clothes, and I just love them so much I don't throw them out. So even if they with bullet holes, I'm not going to throw them out. I just didn't expect anybody to see me, but no, he had to have me turn on the camera, and I forgot that I had a bullet hole in me. Well, not in me, but in the shirt. Actually, I'm not sure where that hole came from. It's tie-dyed, and somebody that worked with T-shirts and stuff said that sometimes the tie-dye will actually cause a weakness in the material. Because all of a sudden I get a hole. I'm like, why do I have a hole in the shirt? So I don't know. But anyway, he had to comment. And I kind of blew him off. I didn't say I was bulletproof. Jeez.
Thankfully, she got her hardware working, which is the important thing.
Well, sort of. I'm still trying to adjust to the mouse. What I did was, and this is for people out there that might be getting these weird headaches that are just, you know, oh, terrible. Well, it might not be in your neck, and it might be in your shoulder because of using the mouse. And I realized after decades, gee, I think that this problem I got with my shoulder is associated with the way I'm using the mouse. But because for decades I used a trackball.
Oh.
And I never had it. But the trackball was breaking down my thumb. I mean, I've got this really weird looking thumb. And I don't have any pain in it, but it's weird looking. It looks like I've got a callous bone, actually. But anyway, so I didn't want to go back to the trackball for that reason. But then I'm having so much trouble with, you know, this reoccurring thing that's annoying the shit out of me that I said, I'm going to just go get a trackball. So I go get a trackball, but that is the strangest thing. Remember I said to you, I'll figure it out. Well, what I didn't realize is that the original trackball I was using, it was under the thumb, not under the forefingers. So I'm here, and I think I'm twisting the ball, and no, I'm just rubbing the material, the mouse. And I'm going, why is this thing not working? And because it was so, because I said, I'll just fall back into my old habits. Well, I did, but it wasn't working on this one. Because the ball was, you know, a trackball is, right, Dolly? Probably not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's raised up and you put your whole hand on it and it's got a ball under it. And, right.
Right.
And
Yeah, this one's symmetric. So the ball is in the middle of the body of this thing, but the one that Nancy's describing, I've seen those, and in fact, I've had to install those. They do make a trackball, that's asymmetric. So it's either left-handed or right-handed, and a person moves it with their thumb. Not this one. This is smack in the middle of the device.
Oh, wow.
It's a total different. I mean, so I didn't realize that. Well, I hadn't worked with it that much. Tuesday morning, I go to do a radio show. No, it was Saturday, and I go to do a radio show, and I'm like, there's this big delay in everything. I'm going like I'm chasing a mouse because I was. Well, I haven't swapped out the other one. I want them both the same, but right now they're not. And so, like, I go to use the one that's not the new one, and I go, oh, my God, how do I use this one now? You know, I mean, it's like, you talk about, you know, teaching a dog old tricks or new tricks. So, because I just heard Jan's show, and it was like that show was the one I was screwing up on. Oh, my God, I didn't realize that was going to be a problem here, but it was.
Well,
you know, you are old.
When did that happen?
I don't know. It just sneaks up.
No, she's just seasoned, that's all. Well, I thoroughly dislike the touchpads in my laptop. I have it disabled. I went into the settings and I just had it disabled because I hated it. If anything touches the surface of anywhere near the touchpad, it'll move the cursor on the screen, and I hate that. I've tried to learn it. I forced myself because if you're traveling and you're moving around, it's comfortable not having a mouse. But I don't have the patience for it. It's just so annoying. You have to use your fingertip, and you have to tap.
Your arm gets sore. Because you've got to reach up there to do the finger thing. You're saying. Yeah, my laptop is that finger, the touch thing. Mm-hmm. I only use it when my mouse won't work fast enough for me.
Yeah, and they used to sell, I remember at the computer shows, a manufacturer used to sell a computer keyboard where in the lower right-hand quadrant of the keyboard near the number pad, there was a touchpad, so you had a touchpad embedded in the keyboard. I don't know how well those sold. I never liked the touchpad, so never got one.
I never heard of that one.
Yeah, it wasn't a big name brand like you would see, like a Logitech keyboard or something. So it must have been an import from the Orient, but I remember seeing it at the computer shows because once a month they would do these wholesale computer shows in New York. You know, they choose different venues like auditoriums or gyms, the gymnasiums and schools, and all the wholesalers and dealers go there to show their wares. So it's a good thing to go to because if you're one of these technically inclined people and you want to assemble your own machine, it's a lot cheaper than buying one already pre-made at a store. That's what I did for a couple of customers when I was living in New York. We went to these wholesale shows and bought everything. You know, the cabinet, the peripherals that he wanted, what motherboard, how much memory. Then we just take it home and then slap it all together. So you get a chance to see a lot of weird stuff. Not that you're going to buy it, but it's at least you know what's out there.
Huh. I never bought anything. I like going to those shows. What do we call them? Home shows or something like that?
Auctions,
or tech shows?
Auctions. Are they auctions?
No, I went to auctions, but I can't do that. I can't control my hand from going up in the air. And then I end up buying stuff. So I can't go there because I just think I get caught up in the bidding war.
Oh, it'd be interesting to let you lose this at a casino then.
Oh, well, I'm pretty good there.
Yeah.
But Stan taught me how to do it. You take $20 and you play with that $20. If you lose, oh, well, you're done. And as you win, you put the money back in your pocket until you get $20, and then you're playing with the house's money. And once you lose the house's money, you quit. You're done. And that's how I play.
But that's like eating one peanut. Who can eat one peanut?
I'm going to ask this question. When were you in a casino, Mr. Walt Silva?
Well, that was my good luck that around the beginning of wintertime, Las Vegas is a venue for a lot of companies because it's not their busy season. And since we were software resellers, we used to sell and support a medical program called Medisoft. So my boss would book us for this three-day lecture tour that the company would do. So all the dealers, it was always hell at the Mirage. So a couple of years, I had to go with my boss to the Mirage in Las Vegas. It's so boring spending 8 hours sitting there listening to the lectures of Medisoft and the things you do with it and insurance claims and blah, blah, blah. So that's when I had a chance to see what a casino looks like on the inside.
I really didn't think you'd ever been in one. That's amazing. Wow. I've never been in one.
You haven't?
No. No. The only place I ever went and gambled was at the racetrack. I was
I've never done that.
Yeah, I was dating a guy and he was really into the track but it wasn't like the flats where the horses are just, the Kentucky Derby type. This was with a little carriage on the back, the trotters.
Yeah.
So it made it much more interesting because the race is twice as long. So like in the flats, if you have a misfortune to get boxed in by a slower horse, you can lose not because of anything your horse or you did, but because of something somebody else did. And it's a short race. So it just takes one mistake and boom, you're out of the race. But with the trotters, it's so long that you can actually get in trouble and then have the time to get out of it. So it's much more exciting. It's much more, fluid in the way that it works. So as far as a spectator sport, it's fun. But the gambling thing was nothing that I'd ever been interested in or even exposed to. But I liked him. So we'd go, and then he'd go in the daytime, and then he'd go at night. And it was like a whole group of people that were doing this. The whole group would get to the next one, and you'd drive all the way to New Hampshire over the Massachusetts border. So I didn't date him for very long. He got boring after a while. That's all he did. But it was a fascinating look at the inside, let's put it, of the gambling, mind. And there was one guy there. Like they knew everything. They knew this horse on this kind of a track, if it was a muddy track, if he didn't have these shoes on, he was going to lose. I mean, it was like crazy the amount of information that they were really looking at to make a decision on a race. It wasn't just, flying with, the numbers or any of that. It was really, so anyway, there was this one guy that was there and he had a family and, seemed very, very happy, but this was his job. And I said to him, and he was up there in age and he's younger than I am now, but he was up there in age. And I said to him, well, have you ever thought that maybe this life gambling was not the way to go? And he said, oh, no. He said, you don't understand. He said, there's been times where I have made, tens of thousands of dollars in a night. And I take my family on a vacation. Or that's how I bought my houses. He says, no, to me, it's a way of doing business. And it put a whole different, spin on the thing. And so I got interested in it. And so we're up in New Hampshire. And as he did every time, he said to me, do you want to place a bet? And I said, yes. And he said, you do? I said, yeah, I want to place a bet. And I said, I want you to, and I put actually $6 out. And I put it on the first, second, and third horse in the first race. And they came in first, second, and third. Oh, my God. I said, beginner's luck, right? And he says, what do you want to do? I said, I want you to take that money and I want you to put it on these horses now. Well, to make a long story short, I had every single first, second, and third horse in every nine races, the Daily Devil, I don't know what it was, and the money from that initial $6 was now $350, because I'm betting on the horses that are going to win, and the horses that are going to win, everybody knows who they are, so the odds are on them aren't great. So every time I would do it, they would all do the same thing. They just started copying me. So the 10th race comes up, and I'm sitting there, and I'm not figuring. I'm not looking at the nothing. I'm just sitting there. And he says to me, what are you doing? And I said, this is the deal. I said, there's always a system behind something, and if you can figure it out, then you've got the game won. I said, but what you can never figure out is odds, the miracle thing, the thing that comes out of the whiz box. I said, I'm waiting for that whiz box. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm just looking at the odds. I said, as soon as we get to the closeout, I said, I want you to take all the money that I've already made and put it on the horse that has the best odds. And he was pissed at me because I wouldn't give him the first, second, and third horse in the 10th race. And as a matter of fact, this is the last time we went on a date, I think. And so what happened was that it was a horse that went out at 50 to 1. So, you know, multiply 50 times $350 and you can figure out what the package was, right? And I'm like, it's a photo finish. They're coming down and they're, you know, it's a longer race, you know, and they're like side by side. And the horse that could probably screw up my life forever was, you know, in the front. And I'm going like, win. No, don't win. Because I knew that if I won and I was gifted with that much money, I'd probably be a gambler for the rest of my life. If it was that easy to make that kind of money, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I kept going back, win, don't win, you know. By a hair, by the nose, this horse lost.
Oh.
You know, and I think it might, now, you know, what, 50, 60 years later, I'm looking at life and I'm going like, oh, the guides were playing with me. What's she going to decide? It's reality was my decision, and I must have decided not to be a gambler.
Uh-huh. And this is chapter one of the book, Enterology.
Thank you.
With that intro, now you tell them about energy.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and you know, and then later on in life, I would get to the point where I never went back to the racetrack, but I never did go to another racetrack after that. I knew what it was about, you know. So, but I did like the Kentucky Derby thingies, you know. So, because people get together and party, you know, and stuff. So I'd look at these Derby critters, you know, the horses. And I could tell which one was going to win just by looking at them. You know, and I did that for a few years, never bet on them or anything. And I never said anything to anybody because it was just this freaky kind of like, it had something in the eye of the horse because if they had the horses, like they would bring them up and they'd have the camera on the horses and you could actually see the horse in the eyes, you know. If they had some other thing, one derby, they didn't do that. And I said, oh, I don't know who the hell's going to win. I never looked in their eyes. No, gambling and cards and stuff like that, nah. Never done that. Well, I played poker, but it was, you know, it wasn't any money. It was chips, that type of thing. So
I grew up playing poker. That's how I learned my numbers and multiplication stuff is by cards. That's how our family taught our kids is the numbers is with cards.
I love it. So did you ever gamble? Walter, did you just walk around and people watch?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't gamble because I just couldn't take the stress and knowing what it took me to earn this money, just throwing it away like that, it's just the epitome of irresponsibility. I couldn't see the entertainment factor of it. I don't get it. What is it that you're finding so? I think the most I did is I invited my boss to see the Star Trek Experience at the Hilton in Las Vegas, where they have this, it's like an amusement park ride where you go into this room and it gets like completely dark and this pitch blackness. You see like little stars just floating in the air, and then there's a whoosh of air, and all of a sudden you're in a spaceship. So it's a really nice ride. You know, they have very good, well made up actors. So you think you're looking at Starfleet personnel. So it's a fun ride. And I think I must have sat in one of the, afterwards I sat in one of these, what do you call it? The, what do you call the machines where you put money and you pull the lever?
Slot machine.
The slot machine. Yeah. Only the slot machine, instead of pulling on a lever, it was all made up to look like a Star Trek, you know, fancy technology, and all you had to do was swipe your hand between, you know, you would interrupt a beam with your hand, so it was more high-tech looking, and I think I made $10 in that. That's about it. That's my gambling career, $10 in a slot machine.
Well, at least you didn't lose your shirt in it.
I think if I was introduced to something like that, that would be a challenge, because when you pull that mechanical thing, it's just whatever the gear is doing. But to put my hand into light, I think I could get suckered into that one.
it was so funny. They made everything look like a Star Trek type feel. And then we sat at the coffee shop, and the waiter was made up like a Ferengi, and there was another guy made up, you know, in full regalia, like a Klingon soldier, and he would go around talking to the people on the different tables. So it was a, you know, interesting, you know, experience. It makes you think like you're in a movie set or something. And they had a replica of, which one was it? The Galaxy type starship, which is the one they used. You know, the Enterprise in Star Trek The Next Generation, you know, Captain Picard, that is called a Galaxy class, where it has the smaller looking engine and the giant dish, which is more oval than round, and that was hanging from the ceiling, but it was bigger than a school bus. This thing was big. I mean, you could see like every single teeny tiny detail on it. It was really well done. And I was asking about something that one of my mother's clients had. I don't know if you ever remember, there was a toy that came out one time. I think it was called a Furby. And you would talk to it, and it would react, and it would talk back, or it would say things. So at one point, they made a Furby version of Yoda from Star Wars. And it would react and it would say things, you know. Remember Yoda was full of all of these aphorisms and sayings and the Force and this or that.
Don't try, do.
Yeah, exactly. And it would open his eyes and move its mouth and move the arms. And he had bought it here at the Hilton, at the Star Trek Experience. And I remember asking an employee, and he says, oh, yeah, I remember that. He says, but that was a one-time run that they did, because they had incorporated all of this Star Wars thing, and he says they haven't brought that item back anymore. That was the Yoda Furby, and they had a full size. I don't know. I guess you would have to be a diehard Star Trek crazy person to buy this. They had an acrylic cylinder. Must have been 7 feet tall, and inside was a full-size replica of a Borg. And this was something that you could buy and take home, you know, or I guess get it shipped to you. A Borg person encased in a plastic cylinder.
I would never buy a Borg. I hate those things.
It's weird. I mean, all the stuff that's there available for, you know, diehard fans to get. I don't think you can get that unless you go to some major
try eBay
mall or eBay, like, exactly like that. But to see it all in one place, you know, that's part of the entertainment, I guess.
What did your boss think about it? Was he a Trekkie, or was he a Trekkie afterwards?
He was one of these. Let's put it this way: my boss was like the like a Bob Newhart clone. That's how expressive he was.
Oh man!
Oh my gosh!
He was such great company. Not.
But you had a good time. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, at least I'm not paying for the trip. You know, the company's paying for the trip and the stay there and all that. If I wanted to, the only thing I was paying for myself is what I was choosing to eat for dinner. During the daytime, the lunch was being paid by the company giving the whole software lectures. So all I had to think about buying my dinner, that's about it.
Hey, listen, that reminds me, what's her face there? Dolly. Dolly and I were talking about, something that reminded me of when you were when you went into that store and then the store disappeared. And now you were on a business trip, I think you said, when this happened to you. Can you tell Dolly that story? Because I think it's very similar to, she was reading a book. That crazy book that she's reading now.
What book is this?
Oh, it makes me laugh. It makes me cry. It makes me feel horror. What is that book?
You mean Memories of Reagan?
No. You have a warped sense of humor, but it's so fast. Oh my
Real
God.
Encounters, different dimensions, and otherworldly beings.
This is a fictional book or somebody's life story?
Well, no. I didn't describe
it's
it.
It's a compilation of stories.
Yeah, and they're people, what they've done in real, had happened to them in real life.
Oh.
And they're the eerie kind of the woo-woo kind, as Annette calls it. Woo-woo.
Creeps me out. One time I told her to stop reading. I couldn't take anymore.
Thank God I did. I mean, it was an incantation that I would have evoked something.
That was different. Yes, all of a sudden. What were you reading at the time? It was something that somebody was saying, telling that she was reading backwards or something, right?
Something like that, yeah. And she was invoking this thing to come out. And thank God Nancy told me not to. I was having trouble reading it, and then I was thinking, I shouldn't be reading this. And Nancy says, stop. And so thank God I did.
Well, I didn't have any choice in it. You know, because what you actually said, because Dave was there, and you said, Dave said that too. I don't think that you thought not to say it. Dave and I were screaming at you, don't. And,
yeah.
Because, I mean, it was like, I had to jump up and run over and do the mousy thing and say, don't say that. You know, and I wasn't even thinking about I was only half listening. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I got to say this to her. Don't do that. You know, but it was really, it was creepy.
It was a part of a story she was reading?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the Keys of Enoch. There are people that have gone kind of loopy after reading the Keys of Enoch, or they've unwittingly invoked some entity. I know that when I used to participate in the Frank Jordan group, he told the story of having a healing session with someone who had an entity in them, and it was because they had been reading this book. I haven't read it. I'm just aware of the title of it.
No, is this the Keys of Enoch by John Hurek?
I don't know. All the Frank Jordan says is that this man had been reading that book and ended up having an entity in him because of reading the book. So I don't know whether the book contains incantations or spells or something. But maybe this guy's personality.
Not the one I read.
Okay.
The one I read is actually a truly weird and kind of magnificent book. The guy that wrote it said that it was given to him as like channeled information, and it was very scientific, had a lot of science in it, that now, decades later, he was actually giving talks to scientists because the science in the book was holding up. But I read it cover to cover a number of times, actually. And, I cover to cover, and then I kept going back to it until somebody stole the book. But I don't remember any kind of incantations at all like that, but it did push your mind into different realms of thinking. They actually had classes on it. This was back in the 90s. They actually had classes. So that's interesting.
So the thing that scared Nancy was the stick man.
Oh, you mean the Slender Man?
Slender Man, yeah.
Slender Man, yeah.
Well, because you know this, you know the story of it, Walt, do you?
Well, I know that Slender Man is a character. There was this series of, like, in episodes that was given, and there's a website on the internet called Creepypasta where people post scary stories, and so most of it is supposed to be fiction. You know, people like reading or writing scary, creepy stories. And at one point in some year, someone started doing this story in series, like episodes, and it was called Marble Hornets. And it was a story about this guy who, and I only read like a fragment of it. I didn't think it was that creepy, but the main character had come home and the parents were out of town, so he was alone, and he looked up the door, the window, and he noticed this character, but the face was away from the house. And then later on, the character is still there, and he notices that it's dressed in a fine suit, but it's extremely tall and long limbs. And when the character turns around, he's got no face. And then then in another episode, the character has to go and investigate something out in the woods, and there's always this slender man in the background haunting him.
Just a minute, let me interrupt you.
Sure, sure.
I'm seeing on TV sudden death of Hillary Clinton's youngest brother, revisiting Clinton pay to play scheme. I wonder if he was done away with.
Fulford is talking about that, and he says why she sent, according to Fulford, she ordered the assassination of her brother, and he says why.
Oh.
I sent you the Fulford report. I don't know if you read it.
I don't read it, Walt. I didn't read it. I don't like him.
I like you reading it.
Yeah. I'd rather hear what you have to say about it, and I can ignore what I don't want to hear. I apologize for interrupting you, but I wanted to say that because this is the first I had seen that.
Okay, but the thing about this whole Slender Man thing is that for some inexplicable reason, I don't know, this is why my number one complaint is when I hear teens and teenagers doing crazy things, like, where the hell are the parents? I mean, are they so self-involved, or are they working 24 hours a day? But there's no parental guidance for these children, because they are, I don't care how big their bodies are, in their minds, they're still children. This seems to have impacted a lot of young people, the Slender Man urban legend, because that horrible thing that happened in New Jersey, I think we had just recently arrived here in Minnesota when I saw it in the news. These two teenage girls from school had coaxed and convinced a 4 or 5-year-old girl into the woods with them. I don't know what they told this poor kid.
Tell it to Thori, because it's an ugly story.
They committed a crime invoking Slender Man. So that's how impactful this crap is on the young people.
Let's put it that way. Let's not talk about it anymore. It was bad enough when I was reading it. Wow.
What was kind of getting creepy about it, or, you know, weird, was the idea that the way I heard it was that somebody said they were going to have a contest. Somehow or another, this story started up. Okay, it was either a contest or the guy just started writing. I don't know. Your story might be more accurate. But he writes about this. And then there were a bunch of people who went, oh my God, I've seen him. And that was what I found intriguing, was that even though it was supposedly a fictional character, there were people who said, I've seen him, but I never said anything to anybody. And there was a number of them, Walt, enough that this started to kind of like snowballing started up. So I wondered, okay, is this Slender Man, you know, some kind of a real kind of entity? And the person that started up the story because they had already seen it. It was part of their reality, but they were putting it in fiction to see what would happen. And so I got to thinking about it, and that's when I told, will you stop reading about this thing? Because I started analyzing, you know, what is this thing? And it's just another one of those weird things that human brains do. You know, they just, I don't know. The more I see about humanity, the more confounding it gets.
Well, it's like the Santa Claus phenomena. Enough people pour their consciousness and belief behind the image that Santa Claus represents, and they create the entity. That's how co-creative man is.
Okay, I'm going to sort of, I'm not segueing away from this. It's sort of the same thing. I got a message from Michael Henry Dunn, who was in Taos, New Mexico, with the commission vote on whether to delay and make sure that this is safe. It's not like kill it, right? Just delay it and make sure that this is safe, 5G in the Taos area. And they rejected the petition.
Now that, so they aren't going to delay it? That's what that means.
Correct.
Oh.
Now, that just is insane to me, because they had the woman who was testified, I think in Michigan, I'm not sure. I think it was Michigan. And actually got voted down when she did go before some government thing. But she was very popular on 5G radio kind of things. And she was there. A lawyer was there to explain the 10th Amendment to them. There was a huge number. Initially, they delayed the meeting because there were too many people. The fire marshal was saying this is an unsafe thing and they had to do something. So there was a tremendous number of people that were there. And yeah, so all he said was, you know, they rejected us, but you're not going to believe the video, the testimonial on the video. So God only knows what they, I don't know. But I thought of any group that should be able to do this, it's small, 15,000 people. It's very, very natural and very picturesque, and they've got a lot of tourism, you know, goes in there. And they want to put this 5G thing in there to ruin everything. So, and there's no, you know, they, like I say, they were saying, please just do it slower. Look at this thing. And gosh only knows how can, I mean, it's stupid. It's stupid how you could possibly vote that way.
I don't understand. Did they even listen to the testimony that Mike had done up?
Well, it wasn't just Mike. It was the people there in Taos. They had three women that we had on 5G radio, and they were very, very motivated. Younger people that, you know, well, one of them had been in the Seattle area, and her cat was killed when they upgraded just the 4G. She herself was dying from neurological breakdown when she finally realized what it could be and got the hell out of Dodge. And as soon as she got beyond the frequency level, she started feeling better, and she goes to Taos, New Mexico, only to find out that Taos is now thinking about 5G. You know, so, and these people had gotten, they knew their homework, they'd done it right. I gave them some pointers, which the main thing is when you're doing a group presentation before a government body, they always give you like 3 minutes, 3 minutes. So you can't go up there and not be absolutely prepared to the point that you've got one message that will be delivered by, you know, if it takes 1,000 people, then 1,000 people at 3 minutes. You know, that the person reads what they've got, the 3 minutes is up, the next person begins to read where they left off. That's the only way you can work with these government to get the entire message in a coherent way into the record. They were doing that, you know. I mean, it was like they just had everything going for them. And initially, I thought that they only needed, you know, they had at least one person that was with them. But I don't know. I asked them, how many voted for you? But, you know, they went immediately after this thing to a group meeting of the people, because it's not over, you know.
Oh, good.
It's not over, no. But now it's going to get nasty, you know. Now you're going to have to, well, like I swear, if I saw that they were putting a 5G antenna on my pole outside my house, I would call the police. And I would make an official report that I was under assault. And that's the only way it's ever going to, you know.
Those grenade launchers are going to come in handy, aren't they?
This can't be allowed. I don't care, you know, what it takes. It can't be allowed. And this would have been the easy way. Just stop for a minute. There's other options. And it comes back to that, what in the hell could they have said to them or done to them that would make them vote so stupidly? There is no proof that these things are healthy. In fact, the president of Poland signed the petition that's got like over 2,000 scientists and doctors involved in it now. The president of Poland signed the petition to stop 5G. Period. Stop it. They're not asking for a moratorium. They know damn well that there's no proof that this stuff is safe. It's not. And there's groups after groups. The National Cities Association, the National Counties Association. We did a whole list on last week's show. We read a whole bunch of these different, who are suing because the FCC has overstepped its bounds. And they're doing it under the concept of the 10th Amendment, which says that if the federal government can only do what the Constitution tells it to do. So the reality of life is that about 99.9% of everything that is in the federal legal system is unconstitutional because they don't have any right to it. They have no right to tell us that the telecommunications companies can't be sued. They have no right to tell us that we have to have a death antenna on our property. They have no right to take away state-owned parks and call it federal. They have none of these rights by the Constitution.
But your birth certificate says that you're property of the state. You're not a free citizen or a sovereign being.
Correct.
You're a property of the state.
Correct.
That's why GIs means government issue.
There are so many things wrong, and I have to say that this last week with the D-Day invasion ceremonies and the one of
he's talking about that too.
Who?
Fulford, about the significance of Trump's meeting in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
I don't know. I know that Dolly didn't read it. I don't know if you didn't read it also.
No, I wait for you to read it. I don't have time to read it and then hear you read it. I wait for you.
Did he tell about evil Prince Charles falling asleep at the table?
Oh, no.
Oh.
That wasn't newsworthy. It was just gossip.
Oh, okay.
I've got thunder out there, so if something happens and I disappear, well, I'll be back when the power comes back.
We'll disappear with you.
Yeah. I don't think it's a problem, because mainly because the dog is not trying to get in my lap.
Oh.
And I can hear it. Normally he'll start reacting before I ever hear it. So anyway, where were we?
Walt keeps talking about Fulford. Why don't we have him read it and talk about it?
13 minutes?
Oh, okay, we'll wait till second hour.
Yeah. It might take a little longer.
Yeah.
No, but I wanted to address that whole thing that was happening this last week, because on Wednesday's show, Michael said something about George Patton. And so all of a sudden I'm like talking about George and what he saw at the end of World War II. And I had thought about this, but I hadn't really ever, I don't think, addressed it and vocally addressed it. But he realized that the war had not been won. Where's all the Nazis? Where are they? They're gone. Where are they? He saw within the American and the Allies, but particularly the Americans because he was closest to it, a tendency towards inhumanity, vengeance, all the things that seemingly were inhumane he was perceiving in his own people. But he had a job to deal directly with the German people. And the German people were horrendously treated after World War II, which you can't kind of, like, fault, because, I mean, they let Hitler and the Nazis do all these terrible things. You're not muted, Walt.
Oh, sorry.
Not a problem. So he began to try to get people more aware of some of the problems that were occurring on the ground with the people, with the civilians. And he got himself into a lot of trouble, but he was always in a lot of trouble. So essentially, they decided that they better get rid of him because he'd also been involved with the Spear of Destiny, which we don't talk about. But, so they assassinated him. Now, the last thing that he thought was, I will remember, which is why, boom, I pop out and I can remember. Because he was a master metaphysician. He knew this programming. He understood it. And so he just programmed, I will remember. And that's why I was 12 years old before I realized that nobody else remembered their past lifetimes. I thought everybody did. But the last thing he said that's recorded verbally was to his wife, Beatrice. And he said, it's too dark. And when I heard that, it's too dark, I actually capitalized in my mind the D. It's too dark. And then he said, no, I mean it's too late. And that sort of like started to ring a bell, because I had never heard this before. I was checking on something, and I came across this information. And because it wouldn't have made any sense to me before, now it does, so they let me see it. So I'm looking at it, and I'm going like, wow, that's really very interesting. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm going like, well, this whole, if you just step back and you look at what's happening to me, it's like they fight this World War II, and honest to God, the images that I was seeing, and I never, ever look at the images. I never look at this kind of documentary. But for some reason, it was like, no, you need to look at this. And it wasn't, I wasn't being emotionally involved with it. It was just observing, picking up information. And what happened during that war, as awful as I know it is to see it graphically portrayed, they were actually using video that I have seen numerous times over my life, but they have always cut the really awful things, the piles and piles of bodies. And the other things that are just so bad that you can't, your mind can't, you know, it reels from it. They've always cut those. No, they were playing them all. You know? And I'm going like, oh my God, this is unbelievable that I'm actually seeing these videos. Even somebody on YouTube that was, had put up a program that was showing Dwight D. Eisenhower and Patton and Bradley going to a concentration camp and what they found there. And he was putting up something in front of the film so that his viewers didn't have to go through it. And I know that I know that he did this, that Patton went into these. I do not, when I actually kind of like remote viewed or remembered so intently that, you know, this image of walking into this, I was not aware of anybody else. I did not know that Ike was there. I didn't know Bradley was there. It was just Patton's own experience in seeing what he saw. So, I mean, I basically saw what he saw. I mean, they said that he was reported to have gotten physically ill and thrown up. And another person said, I have never seen a human being so angry, ever. And he was beside himself. His anger was intense. I mean, just unbelievable. Because he had been fighting this war for, 5 years at that point, and only at the end, when he thought he had won, he realized the entire depravity of it. How deep and insane and evil this thing was. And then he began to look at things a little differently, and he began to see that this evil was part and parcel of something beyond the Germans. Something beyond the Americans or the British or the French. What was this thing? And as a metaphysician, it took him into a place where I think that's why I'm here. I don't think he ever gave up. I think he swore that he wouldn't stop until he stopped it. That he came to some understanding of it. That he was able to short circuit this unbelievable insanity that had taken over the world during World War II, and the same thing had happened in World War I, and now we got it happening, and because we're at war with everybody, or we're trying to be at war with everybody. And I think that, because I was talking to, with Ani Avedisian, and she was saying that she's running into clients who are our age, Dolly, who are putting together groups to start analyzing the stuff that we've been looking at forever. Because I think they're starting to remember. Now, some of us probably died in World War II, come back, go through a lifetime, and then all of a sudden begin to say, there's something I'm missing. What did I forget? And they're starting to wake up, because she said that it is actually a phenomenon that she's watching happen. They're making book groups. They're making social groups. But it's all concerned with unraveling the deceit and lies of the Matrix. So I think that that's why this particular year that the, and seeing Trump in front of those veterans, I mean, one of the veterans was 100 years old. To see him with such respect and really bringing home what happened on the beaches that day and who these people were sitting behind him. And he was so kind. I mean, he told their story, and then he would leave the microphone, and he would go over to them, and he would hug them, and he would say something to them. And it was extremely moving that there, these guys that were just kids, you know, and I don't know, it's like somehow or another they were fighting for something beyond themselves. And we've got to instill that in a whole new generation of people who don't remember. Now, I didn't fight that war, but that war, and I think Dolly, you can attest to it, was so integral to our growing up. You know, I mean, everybody knew about the war. It was part of who we were. And we were proud Americans.
It was everything, every day.
Every day.
Everything, every day. And every night, as we're eating supper, we would sit and listen to Walter Cronkite tell us how many of our soldiers were killed that day. It was a ritual.
You're talking Vietnam now.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking?
I'm talking World War II.
Oh. Yeah,
I mean,
Vietnam.
When you were growing up, was your father, your grandfather, or did you have anybody in the war?
My dad.
Yeah.
But he didn't make a big deal out of it. I just knew he was stationed in Reykjavik. And he just went back there, like, within a year. My brother-in-law took him back there, and those people were so grateful to him for being there that they made a big deal out of him being there. They took pictures. He was interviewed by a newspaper and I think the radio station, and the waiters and waitresses were just so, over Dad having come back and having been there to start with. It was very moving for him. I'm glad that happened.
Now, where was that? In France?
Reykjavik. Iceland.
Iceland?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It was cold. I knew that.
Very interesting. Yeah. So when we get back from break, we will let Ben Fulford tell us what he thinks. But no, there's some kind of an awakening happening. And you know how, Walt, that Casey's been specifically said that the people that were alive now in the 20th century had been alive at the time of Atlantis. You know, you've heard that, correct, Walt? You're muted. Has he left the room? Dolly, are you there?
Sorry, I had heard about it not from Casey, but from another source. In fact, the particular source said that a lot of architectural features were actually throwbacks to that, to some of the architecture used in Atlantis. So, yeah, I heard about that.
Well, I think something about that Atlantis thing was played out in these wars. It's like this thread. I can feel it. It's like a storytelling thread that's going through these things. But we are on the brink of something very, very, I don't know what, but I think other people are feeling
it. It's in the book, The Ringing Cedars of Russia, that the Vedrus that are asleep are starting to wake up.
Ah, thank you. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. Because I was doing something in some energy work, and all of a sudden Anastasi was in the picture. And I worked with her when we first got introduced, but then really haven't, you know, and I thought, oh, wow, she's still at work. Interesting. Okay, I guess I'd better find you. How long do you want, Dolly?
Oh, I don't care. I'm pretty comfy right now, and I don't have to get up and go potty.
Okay.
So, however.
Let's just do John Lennon, Imagine by Julia Westlin.
Imagine there is no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below. I was only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. had no possessions. I wonder if you can love me from greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the living sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I am not the only one. I hope someday join us, and the world will live as
Welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It is June 11th, 2019. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva and Dolly Howard. And I'm assuming that they're back. Are you back?
Ooh.
Back.
Okay. Did Dolly get back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So, you guys want to say anything about anything, or do you want to go into see what Ben has to say?
I'm just waiting on you guys to give me the cue.
Well, I'd like to ask, when did Hillary have her brother killed? Recent?
I don't know. I don't remember if he quotes a date. He just says here why she did it. So.
I forgot. He's going to tell us. Okay.
I'm going to look it up while you read.
Great. The title of the report is Anglo Alliance Cemented by Trump UK Visit Will Lead to Reversal of Post 9/11 Fascist Trend. The visit by US President Donald Trump to the UK last week has healed rifts in the Anglo Alliance and will make sure the post 9/11 fascist coup in the West will be reversed, according to Pentagon and British Royal Family sources. The visit to Great Britain was very much about the Entente Cordiale in the Anglo-America axis and all the ongoing issues of which you already are aware. Brexit is a very big deal. I would say that the trip was a success and the bonds between both countries are now stronger, was how a British royal summed it up. This means there is a split between the Anglo-Americans and the European fascist Nazi aristocrats behind the Bilderberg Group. A semi-official report from the Bilderberg participant confirms that there is a major split between the German-led European Union faction and the Anglos, as well as the Italians. Sources in French intelligence, meanwhile, say they have found proof in the recent European Union parliamentary elections that the recent European Union parliamentary elections were rigged by the German faction. They point to articles which accurately announce the results of the elections that appeared before the elections took place. The battle to liberate France continues, the sources say. Dutch whistleblowers, meanwhile, have been putting out damning information on Bilderberg funding by the Nazi Dutch royal family and their connection to the fascist American Rockefeller, in quotes, in parentheses, Clinton, Bush, etc., faction. Among other things, they report that Boeing manufactured bombers and sent them to Germany to bomb Americans during World War II. This is important because we now have a 30-year Boeing veteran, Patrick Shanahan, as acting defense secretary in the United States, even as all genuine military veterans left the Trump administration at the beginning of this year. Pentagon sources are telling us the domino-like sudden collapse of 26 telephone poles right along the main thoroughfare servicing Boeing's many Seattle facilities along East Marginal Way last week was no coincidence. This was a white hat message to Boeing to cease and desist from the use of remote control override technology in its planes used in airplane accidents, as well as its other warmongering slash war crimes slash war technologies that may use 5G, both public and secret, the sources say. So Boeing could be one of the players pushing so fiercely for the deployment of 5G, I'm thinking after reading this. There are also now more signs that a major financial event, likely bigger than the Lehman shock, is being prepared to finish off the Federal Reserve Board and the European Union Central Bank owning Nazi faction of the Khazarian Mafia. This means that the fiat trading platforms created by Bilderberg Henry Kissinger for the Rockefeller family after the U.S. abandoned the gold standard in 1971 has been shut down and replaced with a basket of currencies trading within a band relative to the price of gold. This can be confirmed by looking at a chart of currency movements since 2012, when the Federal Reserve's 100-year mandate expired. This, combined with massive pumping of money into the stock markets, has led to relative financial stability. However, as Russian President Vladimir Putin noted last week, after meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping, the policy of quantitative easing and the other measures that were taken after Lehman did not solve the problem in essence, but only pushed them into the future. The future may have arrived. Market participants are betting on a huge seismic shock to the financial system. The graph below shows how global trade has now collapsed in a manner identical to what happened at the time of the Lehman shock. By the way, we encountered a systematic attempt to censor this graph from the English language internet and had to go to a Chinese site to relocate it. The other graph that indicates something huge is coming is one showing how long-term interest rates in the Eurodollar markets are even further below short-term rates that were immediately before Lehman. This happens because traders feel something huge is about to happen and try to lock in long-term stable money before it is too late. The G20 finance ministers meeting this past weekend in Japan did not help ease market fears when they issued a statement that read in part, risks remain tilted to the downside, and that trade and geopolitical tensions have intensified. As the usually bland and vague G20 official communiques go, this is pretty radical stuff. We ask our British royal family, Pentagon, CIA, and other sources about this, what this shock might be, but we have run into a very thorough news embargo. The British royal hinted that nothing would happen before September, though. And the fact that most U.S. tariffs on China and sanctions against Huawei and other Chinese firms do not go into effect until September also hints that some sort of world-changing deal is going to be negotiated between now and then. There are some signs of what the deal might involve. Chinese finance ministry sources say China has offered to help rebuild U.S. domestic infrastructure and reintegrate U.S. manufacturing into global chains. Pentagon sources, meanwhile, say that they are ready to cut the waste out of the military-industrial complex and pay for rebuilding the U.S. economy with some high-tech they have been keeping secret. The other big issue that is going to be worked out over the coming months concerns the high-tech giants like Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple. Here, the G20 have already agreed they are going to force them to pay taxes. However, the real issue that needs to be addressed is the censorship and fake information that is proliferating thanks to these high-tech oligopolies. We noticed, for example, that old photographs we could find on the internet of King Salman had been replaced with photographs of his new and young body double. I remember clearly, as do my colleagues, that this article below, talking about how King Salman is so senile he cannot remember what happened a minute ago, had a picture of a very aged and decrepit-looking king. That picture has been replaced. Newspapers and traditional media, which actually have reporters in the real world, reporting on real events, are also saying these high-tech oligopolies are putting them out of business. Even though subscription revenues are rising, high-tech theft has cut their ad revenue down to $16 billion in 2017 from around $50 billion in 2006. This has forced them to cut newsrooms employees to 39,000 from 74,000 over the same period. For years, this newsletter, too, has suffered from Google pirating, Facebook censorship, etc. Now these oligopolies have started shutting down thousands of independent news channels in the name of combating hate speech, when it can often be shown this is pure censorship. For example, this morning when we clicked on a link from jimstonefreelance.com to an article in the New York Post about the murder of Hillary Clinton's brother, we got a message saying the link had been censored. Now it just says cannot find it. This intensified censorship by the internet giants is coinciding with a new murder campaign. Pentagon sources say Hillary Clinton had her brother Tony Rodham murdered to silence him. Also, New York Deputy Police Chief Stephen Silks and veteran detective Joe Calabresi were killed last week because they had possession of copies of the video of Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin torturing and murdering a young girl, the sources say. Also killed was former Arkansas State Senator Linda Collins Smith. Smith was working with a Department of Homeland Security insider to expose $27 million taken from Child Protective Services by the Clinton Foundation, Vatican P2 Freemason sources say. This writer has also recently received death threats to himself and his family by Hazarian Nazis angry at our exposure of their crimes. However, they're not going to be able to murder their way out of justice this time. There are too many of us to kill, and we have truth and justice as well as the military and special forces on our side. The fact that Clinton had to order the death of her own brother shows just how close investigators now are. The wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind to dust. We will conclude our report this week with an update from Indonesia. The banks and pawn shops are reopened now after being shut for 9 days, much to the relief of everybody, sources there say. However, a White Dragon Society source there says, something is definitely brewing here with the disputed presidential election results. My contact on the inside told me that the Constitutional Court is scheduled to give its opinion around the 22nd of June. This is not over yet. There are a few surprises yet to be played. It seems that 17 million ghost votes have been confirmed by independent analysis in Central and East Java, all in favor of Jokowi. The MK has this information along with the proof, and judges know it is authentic. This can flip the results, and Prabowo turn out to be the winner. I am informed by Indonesian intel that the Constitutional Court will declare that a new vote will be held for Central and East Java. They cannot ignore the hard facts. Change is in the wind. This is part of the proxy war between the U.S. and China that will hopefully be settled by September. So, it sounds like September is going to be an interesting month. And that's all he wrote. Wake up, darling.
Well, the brother there, his death was announced by Hillary, but nothing was said about how he died. And he was either 64 or 65.
Recent,
well, this says 608. June 2019. No, it was a few days ago. June 8th.
Oh.
And I'm looking at the New York Times. That's the
maybe she sent them a poison letter.
I don't know. I mean, because, you know, I mean, if you go on, even I'm on Duck right now. Even if you go there, you don't see the alternative spin on what it is. Well, he was murdered. You know, you're just seeing, you know, UPI, New York Post, New York Times giving the same. I mean, it's like, you know, they're just cutting and pasting the same information. Well, you know, she's got an awful. I mean, people will think that we're crazy or Ben's crazy even saying it. But, ladies and gentlemen, this woman has got an awful lot of dead people surrounding her. I mean, statistically, she's way beyond the norm. You know, get close to her and look out, you might die.
Yeah, I don't know who would want to go on an interview to work for her. That sounds a court sentence. For killing all those people, you are sentenced to work for Hillary Clinton. May God have mercy on your soul.
Okay, well, the other thing that I asked you to look at was the LED thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will tell you that after reading Dr. Mercola's I actually read two articles by him regarding LEDs. I did go outside into the sunlight. It was like, oh, man, who knew how important sun is to you? I mean, you know it, but when they're talking about...
Well, that's why I also sent you... I read the whole article, but that's why I also sent you that other thing that was posted by the Balancing Energy by Numbers group, because it makes sense the way it's being explained that we do ourselves possess a photo repair system, but the difference in the article and the information from the group is that the photo repair system that our cells use is in the 380 nanometers wavelength. That puts it in ultraviolet, which to me makes sense because it's putting it near the bandwidth where you would expect to see the beginnings of the etheric body domain, because cell repair is intimately connected. You know, creation is from the top down, not from the bottom up. Cells are going to repair themselves because the etheric counterpart is being repaired. So whatever happens to the etheric happens to the physical, not the other way around. So it makes perfect sense that the 380 nanometers, which is in the ultraviolet range, is where the cells have their photo repair system. What this article is saying is the importance of infrared to the functioning of the body, which is true. It's not lying, but that's impacting more. It's a direct impact on the physical body. So both pieces of information are valid. Now, the one thing that I'm not 100% convinced when he talks about, you know, the particular bandwidth of LED bulbs, because I have an experiment that I've been running now for months on. Remember when I showed you that lamp that looks like a pineal coil on the Skype camera? The thing that's wound and it looks like a giant pine cone. Remember, in order to keep it running, I use a multicolor LED light bulb, and I had seen one of Dunwinter's lectures that the color bandwidth that plants absorb is orange. So I figured, and then I doused with my pendulum, okay, what color do you guys want? And I kept saying the same thing, orange. So I have the orange bulb on during the daylight hours, and it's interesting to note that the three plants that are in the room around the lamp, when the day is like dark and gloomy and cloudy, you know, especially last winter, whereas the plants would tend to point toward the window where the natural light is coming in, most of the leaves would rotate and face the light bulb because the light bulb is giving off orange light. And whatever flickering, they talk about the flickering. Well, if there is flickering, the plants are not, they're actually getting better.
But that's because you might be using an LED, but you're putting it through another device, correct?
Well, no, it's just sitting there on top of the thing, keeping it on. But I noticed that the plants like it, so that's the bandwidth that they want, orange. That's what chlorophyll absorbs orange light.
Well, regardless of what's happening to the plants, what's happening to the eyes, human eyes? And I mean, I got so paranoid. I said, I get an LED light system in the fish tank. Am I making the fish blind? You know, because all of a sudden, something that I thought was, you know, fairly benign, I find out, no, they've known about the dangers of this from way back. Like in 2010, I was reading an article about it. Well, they think that maybe, you know, these LEDs could be damaging the eyes. And it was like, oh, my God, you know, what? How did I miss this one? Now, I really need
well,
to...
Well, like he says, you have to look at the... If it has a label, those lights on the fish tank, do they have a ratings label? It pays you to take a look at the rating and see what is the percentage of red that those things are giving off.
Except for the fact that I've thrown away the thing that might tell me, the packaging. I don't think it's on those things. I'm not about to pull them out. What I did do is I pulled out what they're saying here is, if I've got this right. Let's think in terms of the visible spectrum. And on the, if you're looking at it, it goes from 400, whatever nanometers, I guess it is, wavelength of, in nanometers, 400 to 750. When you get to the 750 side, you're talking about the infrared, 750 and above is infrared. Okay. The visible part of the spectrum that we use is much more critical than, you know, anything that I had really thought about, and they get into a heavy-duty science that I don't think I'm fully cognizant of what it is yet. But essentially what they're saying is that while it can't be seen, the mid and far infrared range, okay, which can be felt as heat, what we're looking at, what it becomes important to the human body is the infrared that has a wavelength between a lower wavelength, which means that it doesn't feel like heat, but that wavelength, which is 700 to 1500 nanometers, is penetrating, it penetrates very deeply into your tissues. And that's what you can get from when you're outside in the sunlight. So the energy that you're getting from the sunlight, okay, is essentially working at the cellular level to give you what you need to stay healthy. So I'm looking at it. Why isn't this thing going down right? Oh gosh, it's the mouse again. Okay, so when you're looking at the electromagnetic, you know, wavelengths, okay. This particular wavelength that is no longer available to us in an LED light. When you've got the old ones, you know, the incandescent ones, you actually were getting that part of the spectrum. So the light itself wasn't detrimental to health. The reason they changed it out had nothing to do with health. It had everything to do with money. It was going to be more, it was going to be cheaper with these LED lights. So everybody wants to get the LED lights because they're cheaper. But then the federal government, absolutely unconstitutional and illegal, said that everybody's going to have these LED lights. So the LED lights come into the market, but there is already science indicating that these things can be damaging. Your mic's open against Walt. So what happened was that it's like a pre-run of 5G. We're going to make you have this stuff, even though we know it's probably damaging to you, and we're going to sell it on the concept of it's cheaper. So they have this stuff that actually, let me go down here and see if I can, oh, this mouse thing, I got to get this mouse thing taken, all right. Okay, come on. Oops, now you're going too fast. I've got it on auto thingy, and it's very weird. Okay, all right, come on, down there, apologize. Okay, so it says, ATP is the fuel your cells need for all of their varied functions. Now, maybe you can explain ATP quickly, Walt, without too much.
Because you mean adenosine triphosphate?
I guess. ATP, yeah, that. ATP.
Well, that's it. That's what we run on. We don't run on sugar. We don't run on fat. We don't run on proteins. You know, people are going to say, what the hell is this guy talking about? Well, that's the truth. We eat sugars and fats and proteins because our body grabs all the stuff and breaks it down to ultimately create, voila, ATP. That's what, you know, each cell, just the same way that our bodies have organs, each cells have little organs called organelles. And the power plant of each cell is that little thing that looks like it looks like the sole of a sandal. It's oval. And it's called the mitochondria. That's the power plant for each cell. That's the motor that gives it energy. And adenosine triphosphate is what it processes. And that's what releases the energy in the body. That's why we eat food. All the food gets metabolized. And in the end, that's the substance that our bodies use, ATP, adenosine triphosphate. In fact, you can actually buy it as a supplement. SAM E, for example, is a supplement that it gives the body directly ATP. And well, they're saying that our bodies produce its own weight in ATP, and if its production were to cease for 15 seconds, you know, the body would die. Well, you know, that's a bit extreme because the life of the body is dependent on the higher bodies. But, you know, it is true, technically true. You know, if the ATP production ceases, then there's nothing for the cell that will make the motors in the cells operate. They need that
ATP. We're talking 3D here, Walt.
Right.
I understand what you're saying. But, you know, the fact of the matter is on the 3D, because you don't have the IRA, the infrared, because you don't have that coming in, the action of your body to create the ATP that then fuels the mitochondria so that you can be healthy, so that you don't age so badly, you know, all of the things that you would like isn't there, correct?
But that's what they claim, because there are tissues in the body that specifically absorb specific bandwidth. So they're claiming that by that bandwidth being absent, that's interfering with that mechanism.
And why do you disagree with this?
I'm not disagreeing. It's just I'm not ready to put myself into you know, throwing all my LED bulbs into the garbage because, well, first off, I'm not entirely dependent on LED bulbs. For people that are concerned about this, like for example, on my nightstand, I have a salt lamp with a little 15 watt standard incandescent light bulb, and the salt lamp gives you that particular color bandwidth which is very beneficial for the body because the Tolbam also produces, you know, beneficial ions. So that I don't have LED bulbs all over the place. The way that this man makes it sound, I disagree with the tone that it's absolute death, because before you're concerned about this absence of the infrared, right, affecting our, okay, have you taken into account the decades that office workers have been working under those dead fluorescent lamps that have absolutely no infrared? That's why when you go to an office place, everybody looks like a zombie. Those are death lights, and now they're going ballistic over LED. So I disagree with the tone of it. I don't disagree with the science that he's putting out. I think it's valid. In fact, to give you an idea that I do agree with him technically, is that I actually downloaded the software that he recommends there in the article. That has a piece of software called Iris, and it will adjust the bandwidth that your computer screen is putting out. So I did it. I downloaded it, and then I activated it. I think it makes sense, so I'm using it. But I do have LED lights where it gives me inexpensive light. Like, for example, the light in the backyard that's on all night. I'm not going to kill anything by keeping it on, and it's only 7 watts, and it's illuminating the backyard. Now, am I sitting under LED lights all day? No.
So, well, see, this is the thing, Walter, is that there are people out there who are working under the LED lights without any concept of it could be causing their eyes to become macro-degenerate disease, blindness. If they pay attention to what, right now you've got a situation where you've got the LED lights there probably all over your house. You can make changes that will mitigate some of the dangers to them. But if you don't understand there could be a danger to them, then you can inadvertently do something that will exasperate this problem.
One of the changes that you can make, which is extremely simple, is that people nowhere can you cannot tell people, oh, get rid of your fat panel plasma display. Nobody's going to do that. That's insane. Nobody's going to get rid of their flat panel screens. You know, those things are ubiquitous. They're in every household. But I did it after reading the article. I grabbed the remote for my TV and started experimenting. And lo and behold, the TV gives me a choice to change the bandwidth of the display. So I switched it from cool to warm. So now it's giving all the tones, all the hues of the colors are actually in the red range as opposed to being cool, which puts it up in the high blue range. So you can do that in your TV. You can adjust the temperature of the color so you're not being exposed to constant blue. Well, that's a simple thing to do.
Thank you very much, because this is what I'm trying to get across to people. You know, that there are certain things that you actually can do to protect yourself. I didn't know about that. That's very interesting. And now that you say it, I remember seeing that when I was setting up some television, probably not this one. So what you're saying is that you go into the television settings for, I'm assuming, the visual. I don't know what they would call
it. And I have a Sharp brand 42-inch flat panel, and it's an LED TV. And I found the setting in the color section where it says color temperature. And it has the setting where you can choose cool, which is high blue, everything is mostly blue, or warm, which everything is mostly orange, red, and yellow. And you don't lose any quality to the image, and it doesn't look bad. But you do notice that the tint, most of the blue, it's not sharp. You know, it doesn't overpower everything. But when you choose cool, that's a much high temperature color, everything is bluish because everything tends to the blue range of the spectrum.
Okay, and the reason is that because the LED is that they're using is on the blue side. You could have one that was on the red side. So in some of these smart televisions, you've got the option of both. So you want to be in the red. You don't want to be in the blue. Now, another thing that they suggested was they had some kind of a, oh, let me see if I can find it, because I couldn't find it on the, I went immediately to my LED stockpile to see what in the heck it was that I had. Okay, so they're talking about temperature, just like he's talking about, right? Temperature. It's red is red is cooler than blue.
Correct. That's the thing that's kind of confusing, because people associate red with heat, and that it doesn't work that way. Color temperature is when you use the word temperature in reference to color, you're talking about bandwidth, not temperature that you feel with a thermometer. So at a higher temperature, and that's one of the things that I don't know, this article was from 2016. I don't know if he was aware of it at the time. Our sun is changing. You notice our sun? It used to be a yellow sun. Now it's looking like white, bluish sun. Yes. So the sun itself is changing its color temperature.
Well, they had some kind of a CRF or something like that. I couldn't find it on my LED box. However, what I did find was a... Well, it's like a line thing, and at the far left is warm, and the far right is cool. And this is as far right as you can get. It's at 27,000K. So, essentially, soft white is what they're calling it. So, it, you know, even the LEDs that you have in there, you're going to get a feeling for how dangerous they could be based on, you know, is that warm or is it cool? And you want it warm, correct?
Correct. So that means much far less blues and stuff like that. So there's not such a high preponderance of blue in the mix of colors.
The other thing that you can do is be aware that you know, LED lights, when they're off by themselves and in a room and they're not on very, very long and you're not being subjected to them, LED lights are fine. But when you're sitting, like I sit with an LED light right there, and it, if I'm at the computer or if I'm just sitting over at the other chair, because I didn't know there was a problem, basically. So when, but I've also got Shungite magnet on it. I told you about that, right? One day I had the Shungite magnet, and these LEDs are like desk lamps, they're metal. And I had a magnet in my hand, I was just sort of playing with it, and I stuck it on the LED light, and I was shocked at the difference in the energy.
All right, because it's changing whatever the EMF that this thing puts out, it's changing it or making it clockwise. So if it's degrading or negative in any way, it's changing the nature of that energy field.
But not in the concept of the color. I don't think it's changing the color. We're talking electromagnetic.
The one time I did notice I think I discussed it in a show that I made experimental Shungite lenses, and I was surprised that when you shine any light through the lens, when you touch the light that passes through the lens, you feel warmth, and it's like it turns the light into like pure argon. But you need two lenses because when I did the dowsing measurements, one lens only affects 60% of the light. So if you want to transmute 100% of the light, you need two lenses, and they have to be spaced a little bit one from the other. They're not supposed to be smack one on top of the other.
Okay, well, but I don't think you can produce enough of these things to make a damn bit of difference in the LED environment.
The point I'm trying to make is that Shungite can affect even the very high frequencies of light. That's the point.
And the thing of it is that there's probably alternatives that they don't have to do this. But it's like they go out of their way to find the worst thing that they can possibly do to us. And I'm firmly with you that, you know, this is a matter of Shungite itself can make can turn all this around. You know, again.
Well, one of the things, for example, that for people that have, okay, let's say they have lamps and stuff like that, or the light bulbs, put a color filter. so that you're filtering out all the blue.
Okay, where would they get these filters?
You can get filters at hobby shops. Just do a search, eBay, Amazon. You can get different formulations of filters. Just look for something that you can that will go on your lamp. Or they sell the LED bulbs. Well, guess what? Get the transparent paint and paint the bulbs.
And what color would you paint it?
I would try yellow or orange, because what you're looking for is you want to filter out the blue. So a light yellow would do it, or a very light orange. You're filtering out most of the blue that the thing is producing, and you're getting the lower frequency, the the warmer colors.
So if they actually used colored lights, like they used to have those bug lights, those yellow bug lights. So if they were using colored bug lights, then we wouldn't have this problem in LED?
No, because that's exactly what the article is pointing to, the absence of the warmer colors. That these things are putting out mostly blue.
So there's an easy fix for this, correct?
Well, the other thing that the article points to, and I downloaded an application on my phone, but I need to get an activation code to get it to run, that he's claiming that these things flicker at a high frequency. And I tried testing it with this app that I downloaded, but I couldn't detect any flicker. He said that in the article that very old smartphones, because the speed of the shutter was different when you would do video of an LED light, sometimes you would be able to perceive the flicker. So in that part of the article, he's not specific as to what is the harm that the flicker does. He just claims that it flickers, that it's not a solid light like an analog light. But then again, he doesn't go into detail, okay, how is the flickering killing you? No, he doesn't say. He just says that it flickers. I try to detect flicker, but I couldn't. So I'll see if there's another app I can download that would give me that function on the phone. Because unless they send me the stupid code to activate the application, unless you activate it, it doesn't do anything. I don't detect any flicker anyway.
Okay, so. The flicker. I'm sorry. I couldn't get the mouse around. The flicker thing, it has to do with because I agree with you. He was very vague on why this would be a problem. But what I'm understanding is that this flickering thing can be used like Morse code and actually program people.
That's the thing where you can find it in YouTube, because he's done quite a number of them. This British guy, Miles Johnston, right. He went ballistic when they started putting these LED streetlights, even before there was even mention of 5G. He was saying how these horrible LED lights could be made to flicker at specific frequencies and brainwash you. Well, that has been proven by medicine for decades and decades, when they proved that strobe lights could induce epileptic seizures, depending on your brain chemistry. So that's scientifically proven. In fact, don't criticize me, because I watched a part of it. I couldn't take it anymore, so I changed the movie. But I did see a few scenes of that stupid movie with John Travolta, Invasion Earth or something. I think it was one of these based on a sci-fi story written by L. Ron Hubbard. And the only part of the film that kind of looks interesting technically, not story-wise, is when he grabs the human slave and sits him down on a chair. And he's sitting in front of not a projecting screen, but it looks like a radar dish. And this thing produces a beam of light that hits the character in the eye and immediately illuminates the retina, and hundreds of years of information are fed directly into his brain, into his neural system. So when the procedure ends, the human is able to understand the language of these aliens perfectly, and he's able to operate the machines. Because the problem that the character of John Travolta had is that these aliens, they cannot tolerate even a little bit of radiation. radiation to them is like absolutely lethal. So he needed this human to fly the ship to a specific area where there was a gigantic deposit of gold, and he wanted the human to retrieve it. But he didn't trust going into an area where there's so much radiation. So what was his choice? He educated the human. How? Well, the machine used a beam of light. And the beam of light, I guess, produced specific frequencies of light with specific frequencies of flickering, and it actually educated the human, gave him all this huge library of information in just a matter of minutes. Big mistake! But he paid for it in the end. So,
well, I'm hoping all of this is a big mistake. It's like you said, we don't understand the full implications of, we do understand that 3D manipulation, mutation of the DNA, all sorts of really what we consider horrendous things happening. But in the world of metaphysics, you know that you're an observer, and these are just things. They're not good or bad. They're just experiences. So let's assume that they get the 5G out there and we all begin to turn into automations, right? So because we're automations,
aren't we supposed to be dead before we turn into automations?
Oh, well, they're gonna keep it in low control until they have to kill us off.
Ah, okay. I just wanted to be clear on that.
See, that's their problem right now, is they're killing instead of just controlling. That's why Gateshead and other places, you know, there's a, oh gosh, I can't remember where it is, but one of the communities in Great Britain has got the 5G, and the teenagers are killing themselves like at unbelievable rates.
Nobody knows where the volume knob is on this thing?
Well, I don't think there is one. You know, I mean, why did all those birds fall out of the sky when they turned it on in The Hague?
So the design engineer just designed the kill circuit. Nobody told me to put a different circuit.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows, because none of this stuff has been tested. And in my opinion, when they went to Gateshead and they actually put the sucker and turned it on, that they made a terrible tactical error, because these people had an immediate, very bad reaction. Every place they've turned it on, there's been an immediate bad reaction. I had somebody talking, I think it was about Norway, and they said that, I don't know what's happened there, but people that I grew up with that I know are like zombies. And I found out that Norway was one of the places that they put 5G in earliest, before anybody was aware of it.
So they themselves are creating a trail of evidence to condemn themselves. That's really
they don't
smart.
Give a, they don't give a crap. They're fascist. You know, they're absolutely fascist. What do I mean by that? When you got communism or democracy, you know, democracy is all for one, communism is one for all. But when you're talking about fascism, it has nothing to do with people. It has everything to do with the state, or the corporation in this case. It's a bizarre way of looking at reality. You know? I mean, I could point to President Trump, make America great again. Why? So everybody's pissing in their pants because you're threatening them? Is that what great is? You know, I mean, it's like there is something fundamentally really, really wrong here. And if we're in a game of observation and figuring out what the game is trying to tell us, we'd better get our handle on this. You know, why is it that people in authority would tell the rest of us, sit there, shut up, I'm the boss and I'm going to kill you? Who in the hell thinks that they should be able to do this?
Reptilians?
They do.
You know, you hope. By the way, I saw David Icke. I listened to David Icke for about an hour and a half last night. That
on
guy,
TV?
No, on YouTube. That guy has really changed his tune.
Really?
It's very, very interesting. Yes, he's gotten very retrospect. He didn't once mention the reptilians, and as a matter of fact, when the host kind of like pushed and prodded him to talk about it, he didn't. He just changed the subject. And he's talking very much about the cabal. It's almost like he's focused on the fight that's right in front of us, the 3D fight, never mind the fact that it might be reptilians at the... Who the hell cares who's at the top of it? Let's just stop whatever they're doing, you know? At this point in the game, I don't care who's doing it. I want you to stop. So it's just one of those... I just feel like we have to figure out how can government officials get up there and tell people who have presented, you know, I mean, if I didn't know the presentation that was made in Taos, that, you know, concerning 5G, I would have said, okay, you know, they missed something. But these girls were very, very diligent in what they were doing. And they had the right people there. They had the right message there. They even, I don't know how far they went, but I mean, they were presenting it with the idea that, look at, nobody's going to, you're going to be the persons, the people that are going to be held responsible for the health conditions of this community. You. Because the federal government has said, well, you can't sue the telecommunications people. So who is it going to be? It's going to be the local people that allowed this to happen. And still, you're not concerned, and nobody's asking you to stop it. All they're asking you to do is put it on pause until it can be determined if it's a health danger. I mean, who are these people? How can this?
It sounds like all their families are being threatened with bodily harm.
I have no idea.
If they can be so actively and consciously stupid like this, is like either they got a suitcase with $10 million, no questions asked, or, you know, death threats left and right.
I hope that's true, because that we can deal with. But we can't deal with somebody that is so brainwashed. I go back to those pictures from World War II. Do you know that there were tens of thousands of German people that killed all their family and themselves when Hitler lost the war? You ever heard about that?
No.
You know,
what I do know from German immigrants, where my father had the store, there were two older gentlemen. From their physical appearance, they must have been in their 70s, I think. They look really old, and both of them had been soldiers in the German army, and they had immigrated to Argentina. So my father was always interested in all that subjects of Second World War and Hitler and all of that. And one night the store was really slow, so it was just the two of them talking. And my father asked about the Gestapo, the SS. And this man says, you know, Mr. Silva, we were more terrified of the SS than we were of the enemy soldiers, because the SS could make you, not only you disappear, but your entire family disappear just for looking at them the wrong way. So they themselves were being terrorized into doing what they did.
Yeah. But there were those that were terrorized, that there was the pressure of fear involved in it. But what I find scary is those people that followed him to the grave.
Mm.
You know, there's a mindset that, well, it goes back to Jonestown. You know, where Jones was able to get all these people to commit suicide. Well, it turns out they didn't commit suicide. In many cases, they were killed, murdered.
Did you forget or leave out the religious fundamentals that committed suicide over 2012? That guy that killed his own family over 2012, because 2012 was the end of the world?
There was a group that did that, right?
There was another group.
No, not Jonestown.
Yeah, well, because the ETs were supposed to come flying by, and if they were in spirit form, they'd be picked up by the ETs or something. It was just totally insane.
Yes, yes.
Totally insane. Anyway, we only got 3 more minutes here. It's something that fundamentally we need to understand, is how can these people... You know, I mean, even somebody that's yelling at me, and I think that they're bizarrely wrong, they're at least stating their minds. You know, these other people that go into this mesmerized zombie thing. And you look at those crowd scenes in Nazi Germany when Hitler was speaking and stuff. These people were mesmerized, enchanted. You know?
Correct. That's why I told you that if you look at an old black and white film of President Perón in Argentina, he spoke exactly the same. He copied the same mannerisms. He was an active disciple of Hitler. That's why in Argentina in the 1920s, the Argentine army uniform was the German uniform.
Right.
When they would march to the Goose-Step march. They were completely... That's why Argentina is number one haven for Nazis.
Very peculiar world. But, yeah, so we'll find out more. Radio 5G tomorrow. Michael, I hope we'll be back to be able to be on the show and explain what happened.
Why wouldn't he be able to?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I just ask these things.
I know.
It just comes out of me.
Well, because, I have this thing. I don't like to make promises that I can't keep. So I know that I'm going to be here because I ain't going anywhere. But he's on the road. I don't know where he's going to be. You know, he's continually traveling, trying to, do shows, get people motivated in 5G. And he's a trooper. Okay, you guys want to say goodnight?
Good night, everybody, and thank you for being here with us. Thank you, Nancy, for producing, and thank you, Dolly, for bringing your sweet voice into the mix. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
You're welcome, Walt. Love you all. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for listening.